Well, thanks for coming along tonight for our discussion on the Liberal Party, what is to be done. A lot of people here tonight, a lot of people on Zoom. Everyone's got to be brief with their comments after it. So our speakers will speak for 10 minutes each, and then we'll do question and discussion. So we're going to lead off with Charlotte Mortlock, former Sky News journalist, host of the podcast Post about women in their 30s, and the founder of Hilma's Network. Then we go to Alex Dorr, who's a member of the New South Wales Liberal Party State Executive. He's a former head of the, or president of the New South Wales Young Liberal Movement and a managing consultant. And we go to Freya Leach, who was the Liberal candidate for the seat of Balmain in the recent New South Wales state election, a research fellow at the Menzies Centre and currently a university student, I think, at the University of Sydney. I don't know how that works, but you're welcome. Very welcome. We won't tell the Vice Chancellor, no. So we'll lead off with Charlotte. We'll go straight to Alex and to Freya and questions and discussion. Charlotte, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming out tonight, everyone. I wanted to start by briefly telling you a little bit about myself, not because I'm self-obsessed, but because I think it provides some important context. I grew up on the North Shore of Sydney in a rusted-on Liberal family where we all voted Liberal, but no one was a party member until me. I had a utopian upbringing, and one of my core beliefs is that privilege has responsibility. Personal accountability is one of my favourite Liberal values and one that I try to take very seriously, which is one of the reasons why I'm doing all I can to help the Liberal Party. I was a journalist for 12 years in New York, Tamworth, and then Sky News for 6 years as a political reporter and news anchor. 2 years ago, I left Sky and started working as an advisor to a politician, and at the same time launched a podcast about women in their 30s. Tonight, I'll be speaking a lot about the party's issue with women. And I think off the bat, it's important to say that I do not want women to get a leg up. I want them to have an equal opportunity. Before anyone says merit, I'm going to beat you to it. The on-merit argument never stacks up because women are always held to a higher standard. No one ever asks which of the men we put in have merit. It seems to be a topic that only rears its head when we support women. Since Tony Abbott brought in the Warringah motion, giving branch members a vote in pre-selections in 2017, there has only been one occasion that a woman has beaten a man, unless they were an incumbent. And if you think that in all of those cases, in 5 whole years, we simply had impressive men who deserved all those spots, you are willfully living in a fantasy land. I've been vocal about some ways forward for the party, but I acknowledge that I have been able to do that for a few reasons. I myself do not want to run. I can speak openly and honestly about what I think the party should do to improve it because I don't need to win a pre-selection, so I don't need to appease members. Tonight, I am not trying to win you over to vote for me. I won't be saying what you want to hear. I'll be saying what I truthfully believe the party must address. I asked a Sydney Institute member last week what they would like to hear in this speech, and they said hope. And I'm very pleased to say that this evening I can absolutely provide that. Amid a pretty diabolical year for the party brand in 2022, I decided to start asking people to join the party. I launched Hilma's Network to recruit women between the ages of 30 and 60 to the Liberal Party membership. We host fun, casual and interesting events every 2 months. In 9 months, Hilma's Network has amassed 1,000 members. We have expanded to 5 states with representatives in each, and last week in Canberra, we hosted our 5th sold-out event this year. There is your dose of hope. Despite the odds, women are still wanting to come to events that are openly affiliated with the Liberal Party. There is hope we can win them back. There is hope we can win seats back. However, and you all knew this was coming, hope is simply a pipe dream unless it is a reality. And in order to create that, we will need to make compromises on what the Liberal Party is, who it represents, and the role we each play in it. Some of you here tonight will say, stop talking about ourselves and focus on Labor. I categorically disagree. Time in opposition is valuable for reform, and we need to use it wisely. If we don't publicly acknowledge that we know we have some flaws, the public will continue to think we lack self-awareness. I also know that some people inside the party will be saying, oh, it's just all a cycle. The party will come back at swings and roundabouts for political parties. These people are not bold, not brave, and not ready to do the work. They are looking for excuses so the party can stay the same. These are not our pioneers, they are not our trailblazers, and they are not the people who will lead us to election-winning glory. This time is different. We are on the precipice of losing entire generations. The data shows people are not simply getting more conservative as they age, and we cannot afford to simply twiddle our thumbs and wait to be back in fashion. What the Liberal Party has done for too long is taken for granted rusting on Libs that might not be members but have still always voted for us. Now these people are saying, do better. They are not saying we will never come back, but they are saying unless you change, we won't. I personally think that is fair. I do not think our party is at its best. I do believe there is absolutely a way for us to maintain our Liberal values, but modernise and evolve enough to appeal to women and people under 55, which are the demographics we have lost. The thing every Liberal needs to be asking themselves right now is how much are you willing to compromise for the greater good of this party? At the moment, there are a lot of Liberals who I truly believe would prefer us to keep losing than to make concessions and start winning. For example, the people in our party with the most power are the people who have been here the longest, and that is a gaping flaw. The Liberal Party is not a charity. We should not be rewarding for long service. That is not competitive, it is not objective, it's not aligned with corporate Australia, and is not aligned with Liberal values. We need to be looking at individuals objectively and saying who is the best person for this job and who can win this seat. Not who has been a party member since the Young Liberals, who has taken the most members to coffee and who has worked on the most campaigns. Of course, we should be grateful and very appreciative for the work our loyalist members have done, and we should be asking always for their insight. But those who believe the Liberal Party owes them a position need to check their entitlement. Nepotism in this party is rife. Predominantly, it's male MPs mobilising for male staffers. There are exceptions that undoubtedly benefit women, but more commonly it is men. Individuals with political staffing experience end up favoured over those with experience in other industries, and there is zero doubt that this affects our policy. We need nurses, lawyers, creatives and tradies all at the table bringing their own ideas to our policy formulation. It's not only staffing, but doing the work that favours men. Predominantly, women are the primary caregivers. That is a fact. They often do not have the time to be working the branch in the same way that men do. This is a very real systemic disadvantage for women. We have to strike a balance where we know our candidates well enough to endorse and vote for them, but not so much that those hours of schmoozing overrule our ability to objectively judge candidates' likeability and winnability for an election. I am not saying that women should be handed seats on a platter. I am not saying that women don't need to work very hard if they want the gig. I am saying sometimes we will need to look past the dude who's been working the branch for 15 years. Because for this party to come back, what we desperately need is fresh blood. The public wants to see a new, fresh Liberal Party. So why is it so hard to get new people climbing the ranks? And who is resistant to changing that? The answer is those who currently hold power internally. Perhaps they don't want to relinquish some personal power for the greater good of the party. Perhaps they're nervous that new people would be more impressive than them and ruin their own ambitions. Perhaps they're scared of change, new ideas, and new perspectives. All of these are weak attributes, and we are not supposed to be a weak party. We are supposed to be bold and not risk-averse, open-minded and not meek, focused on equal opportunity and not exclusivity or elitism, and certainly not nepotism. I and Hilma's network are factionless, and to be honest, I think factions are no longer tenable and we'd be better off without them. The way we beat our chests about being a broad church but then only support people who agree with every single thing we say is childish and narrow-minded. We need to be more curious about those we disagree with. What can we learn? What context is interesting? I'm going to skip a little further ahead if I can. I've got one more minute. I'd like to delve into... I've got a lot to say. I'd like to delve into some key facts on our women's issue. Firstly, the average Australian is a female 37-year-old. The average Liberal member is a male in his 70s. Yeah. Federally, the Coalition's MPs, just 29% are female. Female Coalition candidates performed better than male ones in the last New South Wales election. In Queensland, one of our worst performing states on gender, the LNP holds 21 seats and just 3 are female. That is likely to reduce to 2 in the coming months, meaning female representation at a federal level from the state of Queensland would be at 9%. That is why they won't vote for us. That is why women are embarrassed to admit that they vote Liberal. How can they support a party that is seemingly comfortable with that statistic being the best an Australian state can do in 2023? Whether that statistic bothers each of you here tonight is actually irrelevant because it bothers the women of Australia. So we'll need to fix that to win. Some of you will say, well, that's because women don't want to be in politics. So why is that our fault? If you look at the most senior women in the Labor Party, many have young children and they still want to do the job. If this isn't impacting Labor, why is it impacting us? Women are not a majority. They are not a fringe group. They make up 52% of the population. They are the clear majority. I don't want women to be tokenistic. I don't want a virtue signal. We are pro-women. I don't need to have that line. What we need to have them there for is to influence our policy because we know that men and women think differently and they will have an amazing effect on our culture and our party room. Changing this party is not hard. They tell us it's hard, so no one tries. This is our party's of mice and men moment. If you want hope for the future, you'll need to be brave. The Liberal Party's next iteration is for the bold only.
Thank you, Charlotte. We'll publish the, Anne will publish the full papers, but for tonight we're just sort of keeping it the 10 minutes each. The papers will be a bit longer. Alex.
Well, thank you very much, Charlotte, and thank you, Jared and Anne, for everything that you do in bringing people together in this public space to debate important ideas, and important institutions as well, because nothing is above scrutiny. I also want to recognise, I saw a few well-known faces in the room, Jason Falinski, Fiona Scott, two of our former federal MPs who've represented us in the federal parliament and also won pre-selections as well. Before I begin my address, I want to just take respectful issue with some of the things, Charlotte, that you mentioned tonight, because I think that they demonstrate a fundamental misunderstanding of our party. This is not about appeasing members, but it is about trusting members. I've been a member of the Liberal Party for 15 years. People don't join the Liberal Party because they care about identity. They join the Liberal Party because they care about ideas. It's ideas, not identity, that drives votes in the public space. I don't agree, and I think the evidence pans out, that women only vote for female candidates, that people vote purely on the basis of gender. If that were the case, Julia Gillard would still be Prime Minister. She wouldn't have lost the popular vote, and Pauline Hanson would be our most popular federal parliamentarian. But obviously, that's not the case. There's something else there. 3 years ago, during the COVID pandemic, some neighbours of my parents received a call that every parent dreads. Your son's had a heart attack, he's on life support in Brisbane, and he's not going to make it. And in that moment, their world crashed around them. And they did what any of us would do in their place. With that growing sense of desperation, they tried to get an exemption so that they could see their son for the last time, to hold his hand and say goodbye. Well, try as they might, the exemption wasn't granted. And so their son died alone in a hospital room, surrounded by machines and strangers. And they'll live with that forever. That era of madness and fear and selfishness and greed and inhumanity that swept Australia and robbed those parents and each of us as well of so much. Now, there are some people who look at this and say that identity matters more than ideas. But to those parents, identity, couldn't care less what the identity of their politicians are. They care about the policies that get passed, the decisions that get made that impact their lives. There are some people that say that the Liberal Party, in order to win the next election, needs to surrender to woke identity politics, that we need to reduce our candidate selection to a question of gender, of race, of sexuality through collectivist quotas. They say that to win the next election, we need to appease groups like GetUp and other noisy activists by outflanking them on climate change and on social policy. They say that to win, we need to merely pre-select more people who belong to a particular category or label, and that those people should ideally be as similar to the Teals as possible. That to win, in short, we need to really not be Liberals at all. Well, respectfully, I say they're wrong. If our goal is simply the pursuit of power without principle, then we betray voters. Choosing people to put in Parliament is not the same as casting for a season of Big Brother. It actually has meaning. And all of this brings me to a very simple point. I believe that by restoring faith in our principles and by putting people in Canberra and Macquarie Street with the courage of conviction to fight for them, we'll offer voters a real choice. As John Howard said, politics is the contest of ideas, not of personality, not of gender, not of symbolism. It's the contest of policy, of values, and it means something. And as Robert Menzies said, we should choose our candidates not on the basis of gender, but on, quote, the quality of their minds, the soundness of their character, the humanity of their experiences, the sanity of their policies, and the strengths of their wills. The other point I want to make tonight is that we as Liberals actually have something worth protecting. As a Liberal Party, we are the traditions of the most progressive ideals in human civilization in this great transition of mankind from the swamps to the stars. Three philosophical traditions of liberalism, of meritocracy, and conservatism. And we don't always meet these philosophical ambitions. But it used to be the case that your lot in life was determined by your relationship to the aristocracy. Then in some countries, it's determined by your caste. And then it became about your relationship to the means of production, whether you're a capital owner or whether you're a labourer. But the central notion of meritocracy is that we should judge an individual on their individual merits, on their individual complexity, their ambitions, their dreams, their hopes, the things that make them unique. And that we should strive for equality of opportunity. In short, that we should pick the best person for the job. That's not something that we always meet, but it's not something that we should shy away from, because it is still, to this date, the most efficient organising principle in human history. And liberalism as well. John Stuart Mill in On Liberty spoke of the harm principle, that people should be free except insofar as doing so would cause harm to somebody else. The notion of the rights and responsibilities of the individual. And our philosophical traditions have turbocharged the notion of private property, and in doing so, empowered and provided the aspiration of families and individuals to actually build, accrue, and accumulate something. And our conservative traditions as well. That Burkean concept of an intergenerational compact between the past, the present, and the future. An intergenerational obligation embedded on the idea of incremental improvement that enables us to harness millennia of human progress and to protect institutions that have stood the test of time. Together, these are principles that are powerful, and they represent an unbeatable combination. They empower the individual and they harness the experience of the past. 60 years ago, in his Time for Choosing speech, Ronald Reagan spoke of two friends who'd been talking to a Cuban refugee, a businessman who had escaped Castro. And in the midst of his story, his friend had turned to the other and said, "We don't know how lucky we are." And the Cuban had stopped and said, "How lucky you are. I had some place to escape too." And in that sentence, Reagan said, he told us the entire story. If we lose our freedom here, there is no place to escape too. This is the last stand on earth. Well, there's wisdom in that story for us as well. Because what hope is there for liberalism in this country if even the party of the individual abandons it? What hope to strive for meritocracy if even the Liberal Party decides that quotas should replace merit, aspiration, conviction and belief? Or for conservatism if we fail to protect institutions? Now, I can see that I'm running out of time, so I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that I think the Liberal Party does need to do in order to modernise. Because I think it is fair to say that There is not a deficit when it comes to the identity of candidates, but there is a central issue of courage and substance with the people that we're putting into Parliament. And I agree with Charlotte in one respect, which is that factions are a primary cause of that process. But I believe that when given a robust and democratic pre-selection, members take their duties seriously, and for the most part, they get it right. But more often than not, we've actually removed their say. Factionalism is crippling the Liberal Party. Personalities, not ideas, are now the delineating drivers in this struggle. And the shift has created an incredible problem. A crop of risk-averse politicians, afraid of controversy, a culture where compliance is rewarded, and a disempowered membership where good people see their efforts and talents wasted for factional ends. All of these are hard truths, but we need to be absolutely clear about them. Before plebiscites in New South Wales, it was simply not possible for a candidate to win a pre-selection without factional backing. As the organisation looks to the future, members need to take back control. We need to take this opportunity to restore the politics of ideas and to clear out the rot and dysfunction. And there are some obvious places to start, and I want to quickly give five of them. Firstly, we need pre-selections. The last federal election, we had one pre-selection. You know, it's all well and good to say we're not choosing the right candidates, but members aren't getting a say to choose those candidates. Secondly, we need to simplify our governing document. Our constitution at the moment in New South Wales is longer than the US Constitution, the United Nations Charter, the Australian Constitution, the Medicare Act, put together. It's actually longer than the second Harry Potter book, and it is a much drier read. Secondly, we need to streamline our governance. In New South Wales, our board of directors, on which I sit, is a ridiculous 27 members. It's larger than the Executive Council of NASA. Now, they managed to put people on the moon. We can't even put people into federal seats. So we need to make our governance processes modern. We also need to reduce the number of party roles. We're the anti-bureaucracy party, and yet now we're entangled in our own bureaucracy. There are nearly 5,500 party roles in the division in New South Wales. It's just an environment where everybody gets a prize, and that's simply not efficient, while branches are closing more than two times faster than they're being created. And finally, we need a growth-oriented party that increases the threshold to reject members. It can't be as easy as it has been. In fact, 75% of all members that are rejected in New South Wales are being rejected in non-Liberal seats. This is a staggering outcome because it emphasises these are the places that we actually need to win in order to win an election. But it's rewarded because of the command and control structure where controlling delegates controls outcomes within the party. When we ask people to join... I'll finish on this. When we ask people to join a political party, we ask them for their time and energy. Those energies are being directed at internal gains and the politics of destruction. Reform done right can change that. It could restore the politics of ideas and revive the great hopes of a great institution. We need to be bold. We need to be brave. We need to offer Australians a real choice, and we can do that by taking back control of our party. Thank you.
So, Freya Leach, as I said, the full papers will be published in the Sydney Papers online. Freya?
Thank you very much for the invitation to address the Sydney Institute this evening. It's a privilege to speak among such distinguished guests. Mainland Australia has wall-to-wall Labor governments. Things feel different already. The Opera House was not lit up for the King's coronation. Landmark stamp duty reforms are already being wound back. And race, something we've tried to leave behind as a society, is now at the centre of today's most significant national debate. The effects of a left-wing Labor government are already being felt. However, at the outset, I think it's important to note we've been in this position before. Thanks to the internet for this information, because I was only five at the time, but by 2007, Labor had won a fourth term in New South Wales and Queensland, a third term in Victoria and WA, and Kevin Rudd had just ousted the venerable John Howard. There was not a single Liberal government in the country. We have been in this position before, and we have recovered. But we need to be presenting a renewed vision for our nation, one that takes the lessons of the past, the ever-present values of our party, and adapts to the context of today. But before we plot our path out of opposition, we need to start by understanding where we are. Federally, we lost the urban and female voters, but at a state level, we lost the young people. The adage that people get more conservative as they get older is wrong. When millennials started voting, 35% of them voted for the Liberal Party. Now that's just 26%. Less than one in four people under the age of 40 voted for the coalition during the federal election. And the critical problem is that this cohort of people, my generation, our generation, is only growing in political power. Now they make up an equal proportion of voters as baby boomers. And in key seats where we suffered double-digit swings at the state election, they made up half of our voters. So to answer the question of what is to be done to save the Liberal Party, we must first decipher why millennials and Gen Z are abandoning us at such an alarming rate never before seen. One explanation is that people under 35 have never lived through a recession. For their whole adult life, or the last decade, they've known an unemployment rate of 5.4%, interest rates of 2.3%, and inflation of 1.5%. Now, the irony is, they are the very beneficiaries of the Liberal Party that they despise. So we must reframe our message to cut through in a digital world and meet young people where they're at. That might include looking at new platforms like TikTok or collaborating with influencers. But in this space, Labor is well and truly ahead. Friendly Geordies is an influencer and entertainer who's amassed 211 million views on YouTube and millions of followers across Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. I can name at least a dozen of my friends that are now members of the Labor Party, thanks to Friendly Geordie's evangelism. But the deeper challenge we need to confront as a party is that it's not just the Liberal Party that's out of style. Young people have actually been captured by anti-liberal ideas. And that is the biggest challenge we face. It can't be solved by spending more money on Facebook ads or recruiting more diverse candidates. We actually need to engage in the battle of ideas. Ultimately, liberalism is predicated on two core ideas: freedom and aspiration. For young people, both of these are under attack. Economically, from a person's first paycheck, freedom is robbed. At a minimum, 10.5% of one's wage is carved out and stored in the coffers of big super funds. Mediocre financiers are professionals in slicing and dicing other people's money just to clip a little bit of themselves to deliver barely above market returns. That's money that should be going towards people's first home. The cultural forces pushing against freedom are even more profound. On the one hand, there's this insistence by young people that distinctions associated with inherited identity, be that differences between sexes, classes, religions, or lifestyle, should be rejected in the interest of equality. But on the other hand, young people are being reduced to those very things that the left claims means nothing. The new left is trying to resurrect the class war that Menzies crusaded against by defining people in terms of these immutable personal attributes. The female uprising against Scott Morrison stemmed from his portrayal as a straight white male, out of touch with minorities and a misogynist towards women. The truth was irrelevant. He was a straight white male. And for Gen Z and millennials, that was enough. For young people, it leaves us feeling like we are chained and confined to our arbitrary inherited identity. The new form of identity politics that young people are immersed in also gives rise to a culture of victimhood. We no longer think, what can I offer to my nation? It's, what can a government give to me? And the natural result of all of this is a politics of envy, where the role of the government is to redistribute the wealth of the privileged few to the masses of victims. This is unfortunately at odds with the liberal vision of Australia. While the left is the politics of envy, liberalism is the politics of aspiration. We need to call young people, my generation, to a higher and better way of living, one where we seek to give and not to take, we all know that it's actually the struggles of life, the fight for existence and progress. That is what brings out the best in people and leads to a nation defined by its fierce independence of spirit, matched with a brave responsibility. And out of this struggle grows a people of strength and endurance. But taking on this mantle of responsibility requires young people to be aspirational and not resign themselves to a state of victimhood. That means young people must strive for something higher than themselves. And it begins with striving after home ownership. By the age of 30, 65% of baby boomers own their own home. For millennials, that's just 35%. More concerningly, nearly 60% of first home buyers receive an average of $100,000 from their parents to help with their first home. Now, if home ownership is dependent on your parents' wealth and their wealth is dependent on their home ownership, I foresee us creating a class of landed gentry where wealth is totally based on your inheritance and hereditary privilege. And this will kill aspiration forever. This is not to say that home ownership shouldn't be difficult. In his Forgotten People speeches, Menzies argued that home ownership is the concrete expression of the habits of frugality and saving. It's actually the struggle of attaining one's own home that creates the instinct of responsibility and pride in its owners. But young people must be encouraged to take this road of frugality and feel as though it is actually possible. And the reality is that housing supply has consistently undershot demand for decades. So we can spend all the money we want on social media and we can find the best candidates in the country, but young people won't vote for us because they don't agree with our values anymore. Freedom and aspiration, those are alien concepts for them. But as conservatives, we believe human nature doesn't change. So as I engage with my friends, I do see bright spots. 60% of young people want to own their own business. They want to be entrepreneurs. They want to build a life for themselves. The Liberal Party needs to capture the entrepreneurial spirit of young people and use that as a way to steer them back to the Liberal Party. Ultimately, liberalism is a message of hope for young people. To give them a renewed faith in their capacity for freedom and aspiration is a good thing when all they are hearing from our current culture is that they're a victim. We need to build policy that actually taps into those core pillars of freedom and aspiration and offers young people a better and a distinct vision for life. This quote by Sir Robert Menzies is as true of the Liberal Party today as it was when he said it. We have suffered far too much from people who have no political convictions beyond a more or less genteel adherence to our side of politics. That kind of adherence is worthless. We must have people who believe in things and who are prepared to go out and struggle to make their beliefs universal. As liberals, we need to define what liberal values actually are. Then we must go out and we must prosecute the case, particularly among young people, because I will tell you, if I was not crazy enough to read Friedrich Hayek at 14 years old, I would never have found the Liberal Party. I would have been sucked into the digital echo chamber of leftism that young people are subject to, and I would not be here today. So the responsibility is on all of us to engage in the cultural battle, to fight for freedom, to fight for aspiration, because human nature does not change. It resonated with the people in Robert Menzies' day, and it will resonate with young people today, but we need to take up that mantle of responsibility. Thank you.
So we come to questions and discussion. Everyone's got to be brief and to the point. If our three speakers come up here, we'll start off. So I have a Zoom question. Can you just be, shout of you, come here. Alex in the middle.
Are we standing?
Yep, and we'll pass this around. I think it's directed to you initially, Alex, but just get three views on it. The topic is an artist, the Liberal Party, what is to be done? We've got a question on Zoom. What's to be done with pre-selections? And how have they gone for the next election? I mean, when are they likely to come up? Now, we're primarily talking about the state of New South Wales, but it applies nationally. So we'll start with you.
I can be very quick and simple on this, which is that we need to have them. If we have pre-selections, that would be an improvement, full stop. At the last two elections, we didn't get a whole lot of pre-selections. We didn't get a whole lot of plebiscites. There's a few structural, so plebiscites first and foremost. Secondly, there are a few structural problems. You cannot have a conference, which is the primary organising body of our party, for the people that might not know, which has 100 members and excludes anybody wanting to sign up and says we're going to choose a candidate and nobody else gets a say. Unless our conferences are large and vibrant and growing, then actually it's fake democracy, not real democracy. So bigger branches, bigger conferences and plebiscites.
Charlotte?
Well, I think it's very, that's nice in essence, but we're not, our branches are not large and vibrant. Our branches are dwindling. So I don't think that we can get that true reflection of democracy until we actually have that in our branches. And again, I told you that this evening I'd tell you what I honestly thought and not what I thought everyone wanted to hear. I don't think that the pre-selection process works. I don't think plebiscites work in getting diversity. I understand that members want to have a say and I completely support that, but I do think there does need to be a really good hard look at our constitution and perhaps weighting those pre-selections in a different way until we can actually fix this. People will not trust institutions unless they see people that are in leadership that reflect them, that they can relate to. And we are not that at the moment. We need a lot more diversity, not only on gender, though I bang on a lot about gender, so people can come back to us. And I do not think that the current pre-selection process in the plebiscites works perfectly. Or very well at all.
I noticed this when I was at a Young Liberal event a few weeks ago. There were about 100 people in the room and there were probably only 10 women. About 10% of the room were women. And then we wonder why at the other end, 20 years down the line, there are less women being pre-selected. So from my perspective, especially as a young person in the party, it actually starts on the ground. We have to be reaching out to our friends. And I think this is something amazing Hilma's done, is it's actually been generating that grassroots membership. But that's what we need to be doing more of. And the responsibility is on all of us to not just look at the pre-selections, because that's actually the output. We need to be thinking about the inputs. The input is the membership. And quotas, that sort of stuff, from my perspective, is just a band-aid solution. It doesn't work.
Thanks, Jared. Panel, you all have a common denominator, and that is we need new blood. We need new blood in the party. How are we going to get that party? Sorry, how are we going to get that party, that new blood, when there are people in the party who want to select one of their own kind? And do you also believe the Nomination Review Committee needs review?
Happy to go for it. I can start with the Nomination Review Committee. Very specific internal party process, but I'll give a few examples quickly. Yeah, so Nomination Review Committee vets candidates before they can even nominate. And we've had candidates who are partners at law firms who have been excluded on the basis that they weren't decided, it was decided they weren't a fit and proper person. So they've never been able to face selection. So it's a broken system, and I think we need to revitalise the NRC. I think people vote for people they might identify with, but I just want to make one quick point about diversity, because I reject that the Liberal Party is not diverse. We put in pharmacists, teachers, we put in publicans, we put in lawyers, we put in people from all different backgrounds. Charlotte, let me make this point. You've spoken a lot about the diversity of the Labor Party, so let me tell you about their diversity. They have female union officials, male union officials, old union officials. They have Indigenous union officials and non-Indigenous union officials. I think that's fake diversity. I don't think that's real diversity.
Can I just make a point? We don't do interjections here, okay? That's pretty clear. That's our policy. Okay, let's go.
I'm all for a robust conversation, but I understand the rules. I think that is such a cop-out, Alex. I think that saying that there is diversity of careers in the Liberal Party when we have no diversity of anything else is abhorrent. And that's, like, show me some... We all know what Labor's like. We all know that they're stacked with unions. We all know that we're stacked with staffers. That happens. There are certain people who are attracted to politics. But trying to excuse our way out of it is not going to help. And to your second point about how we attract people to the party and how we... make sure that there is fresh blood. That's one of our things. We're not going to attract them. I think you need to see it to be it.
we need to show that we are diverse. We need to show that we are open to business. And right now there's a lot of people in the Liberal Party who do not want the party to be flooded. And that is absolutely categorically true. I think everyone in the room tonight knows that there are people in conferences, in structures that are not welcoming.
I'll just make one quick point on that. I think one of the challenges for the party is when people sign up, depending on what conference they end up in, they could be plugged in right away or they could be left for dead and never have any engagement with the Liberal Party because their conference is dead. So one of the key things we need to look at is actually membership retention, because people are joining but they often drop off. And this is one of the points I've sort of considered around especially female engagement. Males often find it very hard to mentor women because it's not just about giving advice, it's about actually building a relationship. And so I think one of the things we all need to be conscious of when we're thinking about rebuilding the Liberal Party is building those relationships with new members early enough so that they actually hang around in order to progress through the party and in order to acquire the skills and knowledge to be able to move on to pre-selections.
When I made the point about interjections, talking about interjections from the floor, I wasn't talking about interjections from the speakers. Now, there's a question here, but I can't get a microphone to it. Okay? And I may have missed some, I don't know. Here we go. Speak into the microphone.
I like your suggestion that you've got publicans in the party. I think we should have more of them. The thing that concerns me, and it's in Victoria, of how those female MPs down there were treated, Heath and Maury Redeeming, how the hell is the Liberal Party ever going to survive if you got clowns like Basuto and Matthew Guy running the place?
It's actually, we got through more questions than I thought we would before we'd get to that. So, look, I can give you an answer on that that will not get me cancelled in today's society, and I can give you an answer that everyone wants here. That is a very nuanced topic. I think Moira Deeming, she was rejected at a federal level and then got put in at a state level because they flagged issues with her. I do agree with her cause. I do think that there is a right for women to talk about the intersection of women's rights and trans rights. There is absolutely no doubt that this is a vulnerable and you know, it's very dangerous to be using that group and that community as this political football. I do not think that we should have put Catherine Deaves in at the last election. I thought that that was awful, cruel and poor political strategy. It looked at Australia and said that we were more like America than us. And there is a place for that conversation, but it wasn't that. And I think that, you know, J.K. Rowling, she has stood up for this. She's had sensible conversations. I absolutely agree with that. But Posy Parker, who she associated with, she only ever holds her events outside because she wants to film a documentary. She is deliberately causing disruption. Now, if you want to talk about that and have that conversation, totally fine. I would like to be there too. However, let us not use a vulnerable part of our community as a football for her documentary that has caused all of this grief.
No, this is not really our topic, but you should talk on it. Yeah, okay.
Sure. I mean, I can say it simply, which is I think that we shouldn't succumb to cancel culture, that politics, Latham actually wrote 20 years ago in a column in The Age, he wrote that the politics of ideas has been supplanted by the politics of personal destruction. And I think we have to be less quick to jump to outrage and more quick to try and understand where someone's coming from. I think we as custodians of this tradition of liberalism, of free speech, need to be particularly vigilant in defending that principle. So I don't think it's been managed well in Victoria. I think a lot of members are angry there as well. And we haven't had the difficulties here in New South Wales, but we've certainly got difficulties of a different kind.
Freddie, you want to say something quickly?
I think I agree with elements of both of what you're saying, but I particularly think that if someone's been elected to Parliament in Victoria, it does seem like a bit of a perversion of democracy for the party to then disendorse them on the basis of something like this. And I actually think that culturally the tides are starting to turn on a lot of these sorts of issues, and I don't think we'll look back on this period very fondly.
I've got a question on Zoom here before we go down the back. Someone's saying, well, as a young person, the Liberals haven't delivered enough low taxes and economic reform, and why should I bother? So,
is that for why they should bother to get involved in the party, or? Oh, why the, yes. Well, I mean, that's one of the key things. So you can actually plot voters on three sort of axes. One is left to right, the other is urban to regional, and the other is young to old. That's the diagonal axis. Labor operates in this quadrant up here. They target your left-wing urban young people. The Liberals, we typically operate down here, which is regional, older, centre-right people. Now, the challenge for us as a party is how can we stay true to those centre-right values while still dragging people from this quadrant up here? And that's where I think we get into the eternal values of the Liberal Party, which are freedom and aspiration. And when we actually adopt policies that tap into those core things, we will start dragging voters. For example, during the last state election, when I was campaigning in Balmain, I saw a young person walking up to me. I'd go, do you want to buy a house? Do you know what stamp duty is? They'd go, no. And then you explain what stamp duty is and how it's this extra pointless tax that is lumped onto the deposit you have to pay when you purchase a home. And they go, okay. And then I go, you want to know what we're going to do about it? We're going to abolish it. We're going to give you a smaller land tax instead. And then you could see the gears starting to turn. But we need more of that, and we need more policies like that that are specifically targeted towards young people. Yep.
Oh, I was going to say, totally agree. I think that's really brilliantly expressed. I'd add, what legacy are we leaving young people? The Centre for Independent Studies predicts that public debt in this country will reach over $1 trillion, which means nearly 1 million Australians would have to work their entire working life just to pay that bill. In the last federal budget, the largest single growing line item, not school spending, it's not spending on defence, it's our interest bill. It's the interest on money we've spent. I think that we're leaving young people with a legacy of debt and deficit. And if we want to win those votes back, we need to start going back to this Burkean idea, this intergenerational compact.
Look, I'll just say that I think, you know, trying to say that young people are dumb, is probably not the way we're going to win them back. And trying to say that, you know, they're not voting for us because they're not intelligent enough, I don't think works. I don't think at the moment our policies are having cut through. I don't think they're listening because we have a cultural issue. And I think until we fix the cultural issue and the diversity issue, I really think that they will struggle to switch on to whatever we have to say, which is a huge issue, because when we do have great policy, when we do have great tax reform, we need to be able to get that messaging across. And at the moment, it doesn't matter.
Thanks. Charlotte mentioned that you've mentioned that diversity is important, and that I guess the diversity of our parliament, or the representation in our parliament, should be similar to that of our population. And I'm just wondering whether it's only gender that is relevant there, or whether we should be, for instance, selecting people on the basis, or encouraging people on the basis of their sexual orientation or their ethnicity or other attributes like that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely all forms of diversity that I think we should have better representation of, not just gender. But I think that I go on so much about gender because, as I said, like, it's 52% of the population. It's actually majority. And we have such appalling statistics. How can we appeal to most of the population with such bad stats? Absolutely, diversity of every kind is important and something that we should all be striving for. And then once we get there, we actually will have the ability to just compare CVs, compare experience, compare community and engagement. And that is when we will really start to have that conversation of merit. But right now, I think systemically, there are a lot of things that are holding all sorts of different diversities back from being in our leadership.
I won't stand in front of it. I'll be brief, Jared. Thank you, Anne.
You've got to hold our team out.
Thank you, Jared. Scott Heathwood. I'd just like to bring a bit of experience to the debate. I was president of the Young Liberals quite a few years ago, and when we were running around Balmain and other places, we were fighting the Labor Party desperately as you guys want to fight them. But it was always about the clash of ideas for us. It wasn't about diversity. wasn't about ethnicity, wasn't about religious experience, wasn't about whether you grew up on the North Shore. It was the clash of ideas. And if you look at Australia's history for 50 years, at least, and you can go back further, Whitlam won because he won the battle of ideas, because the Liberal Party was stale. So the party of Menzies was stale. Malcolm Fraser lost the election because he was stale. John Howard won the election because he stayed the course, despite being Mr. 13%. So let's, I think really what we've got to focus on is ideas.
I don't think the town square only works if you've got everyone at the town square. And to only have a certain demographic of Australians at our town square, it's A, we're not having diverse ideas that builds our policy. That's what we need. We need to have different lived experience so we can appeal to the most people. We also need to have, as I said, that trust of, oh, this person looks like me, has a similar experience to me, so I can trust them. People need to relate. That's our common connector as humans, and that's, I think, really important.
Charlotte, you might, firstly, thank you for the question or the comment. I agree with it. I agree with what you said. I'm going to go, Charlotte, you made the point that, we can't insult a demographic in order to win their vote. And I've got to say that all of this talk that the table is what people vote on, I find that fundamentally insulting to voters. I started my address with a story of parents who went through this horrendous time. And the idea that people who have been impacted by government or policies are voting on the basis of a label is actually fundamentally trivialising to them and their experience.
But there is data proving that that is right, that people are voting on those things.
Well, I don't think that is right, because well, can I tell you, Charlotte,
I'm losing control here.
Well, Jared, can I just make one point around data?
You are entitled to respond.
Thank you. One point around data. So in the Liberal Party, there was one piece of research that was undertaken that looked at the manner in which pre-selections were occurring. And it looked at the gender ratio between people who put their hands up for pre-selection and then people who won those pre-selections themselves. And what you would expect is, if there was a fundamental bias in among pre-selectors, you'd expect that maybe 30% of candidates who nominate for pre-selection are women and 20% of candidates who actually win pre-selection are women. The reverse was true. So the data actually doesn't reflect this hidden bias among. Such an insult to Liberal Party members to think that they're voting on that basis. I don't accept that case.
I think this comes back to what I discussed earlier. I think the challenge is a lot of women don't make it to the stage of pre-selections because they drop off too soon. There's a high attrition rate. They have other life priorities. And if you think about what's required of you when you're running for a pre-selection, I mean, Paul Fletcher, for example, resigned from his role at Optus months out from the Bradfield pre-selection to compete against multiple other very highly qualified candidates. So it's not a small task at all. And I think there are a lot of things we should be doing ahead of time to help all people to get through the pre-selection process.
With a little bit of history, Charlotte, I think what you're doing is fantastic. I go back to the days before John Howard won the election. He won that election handsomely in 1996, and he won it off the back of a whole heap of women, apart from other things. You're wrong. The Liberal Party is in denial, Alex, about the female balance in the party. Now, it's for a lot of reasons. And I think, Charlotte, could you tell us how much support are you getting from the party? Because what happened in 1996 happened after years of women in the Liberal Party, from the state directors down, working together to bring women forward, to mentor them, to help them through pre-selections, to give them the chance to do what Paul Fletcher did. But until the party does this, it won't happen. So, okay. Charlotte, tell us how much support you're getting.
No, I'm going to try and take over here. So that's the final comment. So we're going to lead off with Charlotte. We go to Alex. We finish. Okay.
You've got a couple of minutes. I'm not getting any support, is the answer. I do it all myself.
Well, hang on, this one. What do you do? What is your organisation?
So, and just to...
So I launched Hilma's Network in last September. There are now 1,000 women, well, women and men, because women said they didn't want to be siloed and only have females at events. So we made it men and women, which has actually been fantastic for it. 1,000 people, 5 states, 5 sold-out events this year. It's growing very quickly. There's a lot of interest in it, to your point, Freya. It's doing as much in recruitment as it is in re-engaging disgruntled women in the party. I do this. I have a full-time job. It is what I'm doing on the side for free. I'm not earning any money from it. I'm doing this because no one else is. And it is not a creative idea. I am not that smart. Everyone else has had this idea that we have a women's issue. Perhaps we disagree on that. But I do think we have a women's issue. And no one is trying to fix it. And it doesn't, as I said, I don't think it's that hard to fix. It's just no one's trying. So I'm doing it independently. I've got a financial backer who pays for some of the events. The party was... and I mean this at kind of all levels, the members, the structure itself was probably resistant at the beginning or surprised by it, because I didn't tell anyone that I was launching it because I didn't want it to become factional. And I thought that if I started letting people know, then other people would want to be involved and the entire premise of it would be ruined. So I have done it on my own. There is now not so much resistant. There is, you know, our last event in Canberra last weekend was 110 people there and 15 MPs. So there is a lot of support now in that sense, because I think they needed to see it working and they needed to come to events and see what it was about. But yeah, there's no, you know, actual physical support, which is fine. I'm sure if I asked for it, they would, but yeah, it's hard sometimes.
Well, I was going to say to Anne, I actually agree with the point that you're making, which is that we need, I think we need more members, full stop. We need more female members, we need more male members. We were started as a mass political party, 50,000 members. We've got 12,000 in New South Wales. We lost about 1,000 members during the time of the last federal government. So we need to grow our membership. I've spent 15 years doing everything I can to recruit members, to sign people up, to tell them about why the Liberal Party, you can make a difference being involved in a political party. And I know Frey is making that effort as well. So we need to take a growth-oriented approach. We need to attract people to the party, because if we don't do that, we're not going to get the quality, the depth of talent that we need to win back government.
Definitely agree with that. And I think what's on the line here as a party is... it's not just the Liberal Party. I think we all have this tendency to think of it as just this abstract thing that sort of sits there. What we're actually talking about is the direction of our country. That's what's at stake. It's a fundamentally different vision for Australia than the one proposed by any other political party. And it's rooted in deep philosophical traditions that tap into what we think is a fundamental truth about human nature. So I think the attitude is less what can our party do for us, but what can we do for liberalism as a whole? That's been my approach. That's everyone here's approach. And I think that is what's so heartening, and that's what we need to do more of.
Well, I can just say it's been a lively night, I must say. And it's great to have disagreement along with agreement. And that's what we're all about at the Sydney Institute. So I'm very grateful to Charlotte Mortlock, Alex Dorr and Freya Lynch for giving a great performance each tonight. And we'll publish the papers and it'll be up on our YouTube and it'll be up on Sky News eventually and up on our website as well. So there we go. Well done. Thank you to all three of you.